Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Professor Henry Now, Professor Emeritus, Department of Political Science, George Washington University's Elliott School of International Affairs, writing in the Providence magazine about nation building. Nation building is a topic that for 20 years now, Washington has debated and come to no certain opinion. Most recently, nation building was rejected by the Biden administration. Heretofore, it's been tiptoed around. What is nation building? Well, the professor has the big picture of nation building, and its mixed record has been successful more than not. So, in Afghanistan, that nation building right now is the question. Henry, a very good evening to you. Nation building in Afghanistan. The facts now support the fact that it was not successful. Howsoever, what is the point? What is the mission of nation building? What is the United States doing in order to create better conditions for our national security? How do they do it? Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening, John. It's good to be with you. Look, the whole purpose of nation building is to relate to another country, which may or may not be a threat to us. And we need to look at two things in a country. Is there any kind of a material threat coming to us from that country? Is there terrorism in the country? Is there potentially a major adversary that is competing with us for influence in that country? Nation building focuses on the power and the capability of a country to project threat to us. But it also deals with the nature of the government in that country, because it's the nature of the government that directs the material power that that country has and that could potentially threaten us. So we always have to take into account, we have, you know, realists in our debates about American foreign policy who say you should always focus on the geopolitical threats. They mean the material threats from a particular country or a particular group. Well, in addition to that, though, you've got to understand what's the nature of the group that is using the material capability to pose some kind of a threat. So you have to address both. And it's in addressing the nature of that government that is, or that group that is involved in potentially threatening you, that we call nation building. Meaning we've got to somehow or other relate to that group, that government, and we have to try to, in the case of a democracy, we have to try to contain the tendency of authoritarian countries to threaten us, because the real threat comes from the people who are using the power, and they are influenced, obviously, by all sorts of ideological and political factors, and we need to understand those. Are they, in fact, an adversary, or potentially are they a friend, at least a stable country that does not immediately threaten us in any way?
Let's use counterfactual, things that didn't happen, and what if? The two that you evidence are Germany and Japan. What if the Morgenthau Plan, Professor, which was to wipe out Germany's ability to mine or manufacture for the next generation and the one after that, even to plow salt into the fields and leave the population starving? And if we had visited similar depredations on the people of Japan, what would today look like?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, if you took that approach, and you're right, Morgenthau, that was a plan that was considered in the U.S. government in the early 40s, 43, 44, in terms of what we might do after the war. I think you'd probably spend as much time and effort trying to keep that country isolated and under very severe restrictions so that they could not threaten you, as you would if you tried to reestablish a government that was somewhat friendly towards you. So I think the nation building applies whether you're going to try to weaken the country and maintain that weakness, or whether you're going to try to move that country toward a more stable government that doesn't threaten us. Now, I think the key point to bear in mind is that authoritarian countries and authoritarian groups necessarily threaten us in by their ideology. Why is that? Well, because they pose an alternative idea of how you govern a society, and that alternative is anathema to us. We are a free society. We don't want groups dominating within our society, interest groups or religious groups or whatever the case may be. And so we resist that. And there's the tension that develops between countries at this level, as I was suggesting, of the identity of the group or the nation that we're relating to. And so we need to be aware of that and be concerned about it. Now, I don't think we need to go around the world spreading democracy. We can't do that. That's what we've learned in part from our experiences in Afghanistan and Iraq. Should have learned it earlier in Vietnam. Now, we did do it in Germany and Japan, however, as you suggested. But that was a situation in which we had overwhelming power in those two countries. We had just defeated them. They were completely decimated. And so we had complete control in the country. We established some institutions. Then we had to nurture those institutions, and we had to protect those countries. Well, it was a magnificent example of a success in nation building. Now, I don't think we can do that sort of thing unless we're again in a position, as we were after World War II, where we occupy totally decimated countries. We certainly can't intervene in every authoritarian country around the world today, because they might potentially threaten us. So we have to set priorities. That's a hard thing to do. And I think we've learned in the case of Iraq and Afghanistan that you don't make these remote countries a priority, because they are more difficult to stabilize and to potentially move towards more democratic institutions. But secondly, they're not as important as other countries, like, for example, some of the countries in Central Europe or some of the countries in Asia, Central Europe like Ukraine, Asia like Taiwan, where if we lost a democratic alternative in those countries, we would in fact face a significant threat to our interests immediately in Europe, but then ultimately our interests here in protecting our own homeland.
You also report that when we deal with a foreign regime, we have to accept the fact that it's not going to be neat or quick or cheap. And you've used the word messiness. I believe the president used the word messy as well when he talked about his decision in Afghanistan. It's going to be messy. That's not a reason not to do it. Is that correct, Professor?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, now, as I say, we have to first make the determination of what kind of nation building we want to do. In countries like in Iraq and Afghanistan in the future, I hope that we do a very minimal kind of nation building, where all we're really concerned about is a reasonably stable government that doesn't harbor terrorists or give aid to terrorists who might ultimately attack us or our allies. Now, that type of nation building we can do, it seems to me. We should pull our allies in. But in the case of a country like Afghanistan, what if after 2001, after we toppled the government that nurtured the terrorists who attacked us on 9/11. What if we had simply spent about 6 months like we did putting another government in place and then left? All right, with some minimal forces there for intelligence purposes to help us monitor the terrorists that might reemerge in that country and to some extent support the local government. Maybe we would have done a lot better at less cost than spending 20 years there trying to develop a mature government, a stable government, maybe even a democratic government, which then disappeared in 11 days, 20 years later. So in these remote countries, I call them remote or peripheral countries, and by that I mean countries that are not surrounded by strong democracies, strong, wealthy democracies. In those countries, it seems to me we have to follow a very minimal kind of nation building, which is just to preserve a reasonably stable government that will help us to keep an eye on the terrorists in that country and to knock them down the minute they reemerge. Now, in other places like Ukraine, the Baltic countries, for example, in Europe, Taiwan in Asia, those are countries that are more established they're on the border of existing strong democracies. If we were to lose democracy in Ukraine, for example, or in Taiwan, as we have, by the way, already in Hong Kong, then that would suggest that authoritarianism is on the march in Europe and in Asia. And historically, we know that's a wake-up call, that trouble is coming and potentially attacks on us are coming. That's how the attack emerged the case of Pearl Harbor. In the case of Nazi Germany. So, we have to differentiate, the kind of nation building that we need to do. We need to probably realize that in remote areas, we're not going to succeed in making those countries democratic. We may not even succeed in making some of the countries that are on the border of wealthy and strong democracies like Ukraine. We may not make them democratic. But we have to at least support them in their struggle with an authoritarian power like Russia, because Russia does threaten our potential, our interests in that part.
Henry now is the professor emeritus at political science at Elliott School of International Affairs at George Washington University, writing at Providence Magazine about nation building. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.